Happy Thursday. Welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee. My name is Rick Alexander, and today we move on to part four of our five-part series covering Martin Luther King's strength to love. This one is called Love in Action. This one asks some bold questions of us, and I will do my best to frame them in a way that makes sense. So he starts the sermon by talking about this moment, which even if you're not sort of, even if you didn't grow up in Christian culture, you've probably heard of before. He says, few words in the New Testament more clearly and solemnly express the magnanimity of Jesus' spirit than that sublime utterance from the cross. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He goes on to say, this is love at its best. So I want to tee this up for you for a minute, because growing up in church, I was always told, like, oh, Jesus died for you, and you've heard all these mainline points, and that was always difficult as I was a kid for me to get my mind around. I felt like, why me? I didn't do anything. I didn't ask for this. It's always interesting when you're told that you have to be thankful for something that you didn't necessarily ask for. It creates this really weird dichotomy, and there's a lot of theological baggage within the idea of atonement, but there's an archetypal idea here, and this is the one that I want to talk to you about today. This is the one that I believe it's a bit deeper of a message that's represented in this sort of moment on the cross, and that is this, right? Because you have to understand that the conception of this, the legacy of this, is that Jesus was somewhat of a flawless human being, right? He had never necessarily done anything wrong. That is to say, he didn't sin. Classically interpreted sin is to miss the mark. And so at no point did he ever miss the mark. And yet here he is dying in this really shameful way. And so the archetypal idea here is, can you suffer malevolence? Can you take the most amount of suffering possible and still find it within your heart to forgive those who persecute you? That's the deeper idea. I think about all of the small injustices that many of us experience just in our day-to-day that we have so much trouble letting go. I remember there was a time in my life where if you cut me off in traffic, I couldn't even let it go until I at least got to work and told somebody about it, right? I had to feel validated and justified. And so this archetypal idea is that if, in fact, you can suffer and still find it within yourself to love, that you'll be eternally rewarded for such behavior. So Martin Luther King goes on, he says, first, it's a marvelous expression of Jesus' ability to match words with action. And this is what a lot of this sermon is going to talk about. It's this idea that we have to mix up our intentions and what we want and the words that we say and profess with the things that we actually do. He says, one of the greatest tragedies of life is that man seldom bridged the gulf between practice and profession, between doing and saying. A persistent schizophrenia leaves so many of us tragically divided against ourselves. On the one hand, we profoundly profess certain sublime and noble principles, but on the other hand, we sadly practice the very antithesis of those principles. You know, something Danielle and I are getting ready to do this book club on Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. One of the main things that I've taken away from the work of Jordan Peterson is this idea. He has a whole book called Maps of Meaning, in which he has tried to deduce and figure out the architecture of belief. What does it mean to believe something? And why is it that so many people are willing to suffer or to make other people suffer for these thoughts that they've believed? And so one of the things that I've taken away from his work is this: it's belief is actually how you act. Whatever you truly, and let's say deeply, believe is reflected in how you are. And as I realized that, a lot of things began to make sense to me. I remember growing up, I would see a lot of hypocrisy, and I could never really understand why until I came to the understanding that that's because people tell themselves who they want to be. They tell themselves what they want to hear. They tell other people how they want to be perceived. The problem is your deepest belief, it actually shows up in your actions, right? Because if you're willing to put action in the world behind these beliefs, then they're true. otherwise they're not. So I did a podcast a couple of weeks ago on this idea of faith, right? Because, and the reason I wanted to do it is because I see so many people that come from these so-called faith-based communities and yet are worried sick. I have members in my own family that are along those lines. And the idea is like, well, if you had faith, faith seems to take away your worries. So where is the disconnect? Oftentimes the disconnect is because no matter how much we tell ourselves, no matter how much we tell other people things, the thing that we actually believe is what we do. And so a good question for you might be, outside of can you suffer and still love, another question for you might be, if you're to look back on your actions this year, what are your deepest beliefs? What are your actual beliefs based on the actions that you've taken? He goes on to say, we talk passionately about peace, and at the same time, we assiduously prepare for war. We make our fervent pleas for the high road of justice, and then we tread unflinchingly the low road of injustice. This strange dichotomy, this agonizing gulf between the ought and the is, represents the tragic theme of man's earthly pilgrimage. He's asking, can you do it when it matters? Not can you say it, but can you do it when it matters? Can you stand up when you're actually in the midst of injustice? Because that is the only time that it actually matters. He goes on to say, forgiveness is not an occasional act. It is a permanent attitude. Forgiveness. Forgiveness is an interesting thing. Can I tell you something? Forgiveness is about you. Right? So this is hard. Sometimes people want our forgiveness, right? Maybe lovers, maybe friends, etc. But primarily, it's about you. It's about not carrying around things like resentment, right? Because here's why. Things like resentment, over time, will rot your soul from the inside out. Resentment has an appetite that you'll never satiate. It's like a splinter. But if you leave it there, it'll get infected. It might not be that bad at the time. So when you forgive people, when you learn to forgive people, when you learn to forgive life for the bullshit that you've gone through, remember that was sort of the crux of my faith episode. You have to, you can't have faith and trust in life and still resent it at the same time. You've got to forgive, you've got to let go, and you let go for you. Because in the space inside of you where those things normally are, what you'll find is if you can let them go, the thing that's going to fill in that space is hope. It's hope for a better tomorrow. It's hope for a better state of being. But that forgiveness, even though you're trying to forgive other people, maybe you do need to forgive yourself, but in any case, it's actually about you, right? Because it puts you in hell and you don't deserve to be there. Like I've said this on this podcast many times, right? Same thing with people that cut you off in work or people that just, they subject you to these little injustices all throughout our lives. We let that go for us. Now, they get to be the benefits of our forgiveness, right? They get to live in the world that we live in. But really, the world that we're creating, if we craft it on top of resentment and things we can't let go, you're going to find less and less freedom in your life. And over time, your soul is just going to, you're going to feel the deterioration of your inner state. And there's this old religious idea in some of the hunter-gatherer cultures that actually humans don't have a soul. You're not just given a soul, your first sort of life on earth, but actually you create one. You create a soul by the way that you love, by the way you position yourself in life, by the way that you act. And so in that way, you can actually use your actions to build your bridge to eternity. That's this deep idea that was sort of built into the religions that predate the religions that we study today. And you have to think there's a little bit of merit in this idea, because as you start to position yourself a certain way in life, as you start to invite people into this place of love, this place of expansiveness, as you start to forgive people, you start to notice this inspiration that happens within your soul, within you. Like you actually feel expanded. You know, on one hand, we're this creature. We're small-minded survivalists. But on the other hand, you know, depending on the wolf that you choose to feed, the way that you position in your life, we've got the possibility to become something more, something deeper, something bigger, something expansive, something transcendent. He goes on to say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. This was his heavenly response to his earthly rendezvous with destiny. And so this is kind of what I was talking about, this idea of the way that you position your life, you can actually have a heavenly response. And in doing so, you build that bridge to eternity. And so he says, this was his heavenly response to his earthly rendezvous with destiny. I'm wondering, when you are met with your date with destiny, are you able to respond with divinity? In order to do that, that's what love in action is, right? This is why love is considered the language of God, because if you want to respond heavenly, then you've got to learn to position yourself and live in a way that makes that possible, which is why I like that he says forgiveness is not an occasional act, not at all. It's a permanent attitude. You practice this day in, day out, and then you become something more. He goes on to say the potential beauty of human life is constantly made ugly by man's reoccurring song of retaliation. So I'll direct you back to earlier episodes where I talk about how he really says, listen, your response to be angry toward people or to be hateful toward people, it denigrates you, right? It denigrates your potential. That transcendent nature that we've been talking about based on the way that you position yourself and the way that you love the people in your life, you take that away from yourself when you choose not to forgive, or when you sling hate, or when you react in these sort of small-minded, survivalist type attitudes that quite honestly in 2020 we have the ability to transcend. He goes on, he says, only goodness can drive out evil, and only love can conquer hate. As we close, I'd like to have you think about a little bit about this idea that man and woman, for that matter, humanity, let's say, is really both, right? This is something I tried to get through in my second book, this idea that, yeah, on one hand, we are just creature, right? On one hand, we're just animal. We're survivalists. We make small-minded decisions. But at our best, we're something bigger, right? At our best, we put people on the moon. At our best, we cure polio. At our best, we have an expansiveness that reaches far beyond the finiteness of anybody's one limited life. Can you suffer and still be in love? That's the deepest idea in this episode. Can you suffer and still be in love? If so, you'll be eternally rewarded. I love you guys. I hope you have an amazing day. We'll talk later on Morning Coffee. We'll be right back.